You're listening to the Cycling Podcast at the Vuelta a España in association with Rafa. Today we are in Oiz.
Well, hello and welcome to the Cycling Podcast, stage 17 of the Vuelta a España, which is unfolding on a big screen in front of us because Fran, Reyes, we're in a bar, aren't we?
Yes, we are in a bar in Durango, one of the hotbeds for Spanish cycling. Here we have the headquarters of one of the best ever women's cycling teams in Spain, Vizcaya Durango, which nowadays is still racing, and back in the early noughties won 2 times the Tour de France and 3 times the Giro Rosa with Joanes Somarriba.
And we're in the Basque Country, which is a hotbed of cycling worldwide, never mind in Spain. Crowds really quite noticeably bigger today. They were big at the start in Getxo this morning.
Getxo.
That's not a place that I know so well. With a lot of local riders, obviously the Izaguirre brothers, Marc Irizar. We're very close to his home village here. Lots of other Basque riders, and in fact the Basque team, Euskadi Murias, they do have a rider up in the breakaway today. As I said, the stage is not finished yet, but they've been chasing very hard on the front of the bunch, which has taken a lot of people by surprise. Why are they doing that?
First things first, because the Estor Saez, the guy in the breakaway, is by far not the best climber of the team and not the best climber on the breakaway. And second, because they have to show themselves in front of their public. They have to show also their ambition, which is good, and also I'd say it's great to see a second tier team being this eager to take the reins of the race and prove that it is possible.
Well, quite impressive, and they brought the lead down quite dramatic because the break had over 8 minutes and it had some quality riders in it. Just to run through who some of them were: Thomas De Gendt, of course. Do I even need to say that? Thomas De Gendt, and he's on a mission today. He's actually taken over the lead in the King of the Mountains competition from Luis Angel Matte, who, I mean, in a cruel twist, just as De Gendt was taking the points that allowed him to leapfrog Matte was slipping out the back of the bunch. He's been quite unwell. Also in that 21-man group, well, I'll not list all the names, but Andre Amador, Castroviejo, Simon Clark, David de la Cruz, DeMarque, Omar Fraile, another local rider who actually went through his home village and gave them a little salute. It's former Sergio Genies, former red jersey wearer Herrada, Bach Mollema, Vincenzo Nibali, Lucas Postelberger, Michael Woods, somebody who might fancy today's very sweet finish, Ilna Zakarin, Peter Seri. So a very, very strong group once again. And that put pressure on Mitchelson Scott right from the start. Not that there was anybody in that group who necessarily threatened them, but there were riders like Andre Amador up the road who potentially could be of assistance to Movistar later on. We're expecting a Movistar offensive on this very, 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 very steep climb to Balcón de Biscaya.
Are we?
Well, surely, Fran, it's now or never, no?
Well, I mean, they should definitely show something, especially from Nairo Quintana. You know, this is the kind of climb where he can excel, so he should better attack.
Well, let's see. I mean, Matt White, certainly at the start this morning, was anticipating a really hard day for his team. He said that Matteo Trentin had a big role today, and we've seen a lot of the European champion on the front. Adam Yates, he also expects a lot from him later in the week, in Andorra in particular. But I went to see Matt White because we had quite an amusing email from a listener overnight. He finds himself in a very awkward position with Simon Yates still in the red jersey and looking like he might win the Vuelta. So I went and found Matt White, and I actually read the listener's email to Matt, and here's what he said. An email from a listener, okay?
Yes.
Mr. Roger Clotworthy. My family have been pressuring me for some time now to allow them to have a dog. For various reasons, I'm reluctant. Back in the summer, I agreed that we could have a dog if England won the Football World Cup, safe from the knowledge this wouldn't happen. In similar fashion, I told my daughter that we could have a dog if Simon Yates wins the Vuelta. At this stage in the current race, how worried should I be?
I'll be looking at certain breeds, that's for sure. Nah, we're in a good position. We're in a good position. There's a lot of racing to go, and it's still one of the tightest GC battles in a Grand Tour for a long time. But quietly confident, but a long way to go.
Kreuzwijk, momentum's so important, isn't it? And he seemed to put in a really great ride yesterday. Struggled a bit on Lagos de Covadonga, but I mean, it still looks so open, doesn't it?
It still does. Look, we knew he'd do a good time trial yesterday, but actually, he probably mistimed his ride yesterday because he went out faster than one of the best time trials in the world and paid for it a little bit in the end. Look, he's a diesel, and I think having that back end between third and sixth place so tight is of benefit to us as well, because people, you know, the closer we get to the finish, people start racing for a podium, people start racing to hold on to their position, and I think it's good for us.
Simon at the Giro had to go so deep, didn't he, in that time trial? He was racing for his life, as if his life depended on it. Did he approach the time trial yesterday a little bit differently?
A little bit. It was a little bit different course, but I think at the Giro, I think Simon started that time trial already pretty tired. He made a massive effort in Zapata to win that stage, and it was a cumulative effort over the Giro that sort of got the best of him.
Una estrella Galicia, y me va a poner también un rollo de estos que tiene ahí, por favor.
That was Fran ordering a beer, and that was Roger Clotworthy's question that we heard Matt White's response. Obviously very bullish, but with threats all over the place, and as they approach, well, they are now just inside 13 kilometres to go to the finish. We're watching it from a bar at the moment. We're going to head to the team buses and get the riders once they've come back down the mountain. That's the plan anyway. Among the riders who'll be hoping to sort of consolidate his position today is a rider who's been really impressive, Tony Gallopin, a rider we know well, been around a few years, former Tour de France stage winner. Did he have the yellow jersey in the Tour de France briefly as well? I think he did.
Yeah.
Rode for many years for Lotto Soudal, now at AG2R. And this is the first Grand Tour where he has focused on GC. He won a stage early on, of course, Tony Gallopin, but he and the time trial moved back up to 10th overall, and a top 10 finish would be a great result for him. So I went and found him this morning. Here's what he said. Moved back up overall yesterday into the top 10. I mean, this is a sort of a voyage of discovery for you, I guess, is it?
Yes, for sure is it. It's the first time I tried to play the GC and the Grand Tour. So it's a new experience. Now I'm coming in the third week, so it will be hard to stay here, but now is my big focus, so I will try my best.
And you have a stage win, of course, so I guess that makes it a successful race, but would a top 10 finish for you be a result you'd be very pleased with and proud of?
Yes, for sure. After the stage victory, I was more relaxed, I can say, and then I said, okay, now I tried the GC full. And then, yes, with this kind of race, with so much hard finish and this level, because in the front of me, just strong climber. So it's a good, for me, it's a really good result for the moment. If I can keep going like this and finish in the top 10, I will surprise myself and I will be super happy.
And in the future, is it a route you want to go down again, or maybe look at becoming a GC rider on maybe week-long stage races and things like that?
No, I knew that I can play something on a one-week race like Paris-Nice, but for me, GC was the first time. Then we have to take the decision, because I also like the Classic. I like the Cobber Classic, I like the Harden Classic, I like the one-week race, the Grand Tours. Then I think at the end of this Grand Tour, in this winter we will speak, and then we'll see what I can do in the future.
So that was Tony Gallopin, a big day for him today, as it is for everybody. But this climb, Fran, is absolutely brutal. We keep seeing it at the Vuelta, but it's steep, it's 24% in places. The surface looks nasty, filthy, Simon Yates might call it, very kind of rough and uneven. And well, it could be another tortoise race, couldn't it? And as I say that, we're seeing Astana really on the front. I mean, they're not bringing the gap down. I think it's going to be one of the riders from the breakaway who wins it. And clearly, Vincenzo Nibali is honing his preparation for the World Championships. And the finish today, you know, not dissimilar at all to the final climb, albeit a bit longer today in Innsbruck. So Nibali's clearly on a mission today. But this climb is a nasty one, isn't it?
Yeah, have you seen Egan Bernal's tweet? He said that this is the toughest climb he has ever ridden. So yeah, that's that kind of tells the story. This Monte Oid is one of the Horn Mountains here. Apparently, back in the 16th century, I think, the province of Vizcaya had five mountains, one of which Oiz, from which they would blow horns whenever there were news or dangers or whatever, in order to alert the population of the whole Vizcaya Peninsula. Who will blow the horns today, Rich?
Well, I mean, somebody that we're expecting to go well in this final week, a diesel engine, as Matt White said this morning, is Stephen Kreuzweg, who rode a great time trial, of course, on Tuesday and put himself right back in contention to win the race. I spoke to his young American teammate, Sepp Kuss, riding his first Grand Tour this morning. You know, he's got a big job to do. He's been very impressive so far, real strong rider in the mountains. Here is Sepp Kuss at the start this morning. How are you feeling? Your first Grand Tour, this will be the most days you've raced. How are you feeling into the third week now?
Definitely tired. First 12, 13 days, I was feeling pretty good and felt like I was recovering really well after every day. And then, with the three hard mountain days back to back, I was really feeling it. So, I think that's normal. And going into it, there's no pressure either. So just to get through it, and we'll see. I mean, the rest day and the time trial took it easy, so hopefully that'll have me me on the right track again.
We couldn't help but notice there were a lot of your teammates packing the lower place in time trial. Was that a deliberate strategy?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, there's no use in gunning it for nothing really. So we've all got a lot of faith in Stevie, and I mean, he did an awesome ride. So every bit of energy you can save is going to make a big difference in the end. So
he is right back in it, you know, and this race still looks really open. How do you feel as a team to have? I guess he built a bit of momentum yesterday. You maybe feel that he's building up some momentum going into these really crucial stages.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's been a good energy even since the first stages, but. We know he's super consistent, dependable rider. So, I mean, all we have to do is, get him in the right spot and be there for him. And then we're really confident that he can always be there on the finals, because he's just that kind of rider. So, it's good to have have a guy like that. And it seems like he's getting better every day, and even on the steeper finishes, short explosive ones that don't suit him as well, he's been riding really well. So everything's looking up.
I mean, just finally, he is, as you say, a very experienced rider, very consistent. Yeah. What are you taking the opportunity to learn what you can from him?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, just being there later with those guys is a big learning experience, because you know, when you're with guys that are more experienced, it kind of slows everything down a little bit, and it's not as nervous when you're maybe thinking about it beforehand or in the moment. And those guys really know how to be conservative in the finishes, and it's a good learning experience.
So that was Sepp Kuss, a rider who won the Tour of Utah recently and has really impressed people here. As his team, Lotto NL Jumbo, they've really impressed people these last few months in particular. They've built a very strong Grand Tour team. Lots of strong riders going to be coming over the winter as well, we're led to believe, including Tony Martin. And clearly there's a project there to build a very strong team to challenge Team Sky in the Grand Tours. We heard a little bit about their new sponsor, Team Jumbo. It'll be Team Jumbo from next year, about the supermarket behind the team, and how they've got this ongoing deal, I think at least 5 years with a 2-year notice period. That was in our Kilometre Zero the other day on sponsorship. I think that was Monday that came out. But yeah, Sepp Kuss has been very impressive so far. Astana really chasing very hard. They're not going to catch this front group. One or two people in that front group who I even forgot to mention, Merhawi Kudus, Rafael Maika. Both of them went close, of course, the other day at La Camperona, didn't they? And Micah especially, I imagine, is out for revenge. Quite a few riders though whose speciality is this kind of steep climb. I'm thinking Michael Woods, who told us how much he loves these the really steep climbs, where the action, he said, is most similar to running. He used to be a good runner. So Michael Woods, Rafael Micah, Vincenzo Nibali, who else do we see as being contention on this climb, Fran?
David de la Cruz, for example, he's a bit disappointed with his performance in this Vuelta, because of course he had a big GC ambitions and he hasn't quite delivered on them. Yet he's strong enough and a pretty good climber, so I would expect him to be in the top five today, as well as, I don't know, Bok Mollema, Ilnur Sakarin, he was the other day there in La Camperona, like Dylan Toins. Plenty of candidates, it's hard to pick one.
From grand tours to group rides, the Champs-Élysées to coffee shops, Rafa exists to celebrate the world's most beautiful sport.
Thank you very much to Rafa, our headline sponsor. A reminder that Rafa hosts regular rides every day of the week for more than 20 clubhouses around the world. One that's coming up in the not too distant future is the Cross Prestige in Manchester. Approximately 100 kilometres of rolling terrain, we navigate a hugely varied selection of tracks from muddy bridleways to flowing single track. There will be checkpoint locations and a supplied route. That's in Manchester on the 4th of November, level off-road, obviously, intermediate advanced. Go to rafa.cc to see details of all the organised Rafa rides. Now, Fran, we're on the climb. It's all kicking off up front. Simon Clark has been very, very active. You can't help but think that he's trying to set it up for his teammate, Education First teammate, Michael Woods.
Yeah, definitely. He's up to something. Astana is pulling strong in the back, in the front of the peloton, sorry. The gap is falling. I mean, they have lost more or less 1 minute of advantage in 5 to 6 kilometers. Crash, Fabio Aru.
Fabio Aru, it's been a miserable Vuelta for him, really. I think you'd given up on him winning the race, as you were insisting only a few days ago, Fran.
Yeah, I think I'm not... It hasn't been a very good start for my bookmaking career. But the other day I was speaking to José Machin, DS at UAE Team Emirates. He told me that even if he was not feeling bad, he wasn't quite all right, that he wasn't on the best shape and didn't have the punch as to fight with the best in the final climbs. Now we've seen some signs of frustration from him, even if the DSs were kind of...
It was on the descent, it was a nasty looking crash. There was a kind of ditch to the side of the road, and he went into that, his bike went flying, and his clothing's pretty badly ripped. He looks quite hurt, but he also looked extremely angry, and he's riding on, but he's displaying rather too much flesh and bloody wounds for most people's taste. So back to the front of the race.
Yeah, I think it's been a pretty crap season for Fabio Aru so far. You know, he was following the training regimes from Paolo Tiralongo, and they didn't work out well at all for the Giro d'Italia. They later changed the role of Tiralongo for another one of technical advisor within the team. He's also kind of mentoring Aru still. But now he's following different training plans for a different coach. Yet that doesn't mean that he's going to be back in his best shape immediately. And definitely he is in his best shape on this Vuelta.
At the front of the group, another Basque rider, Peyo Bilbao, is setting a pretty fearsome tempo with Superman Lopez on his wheel. This is a real statement of intent from Lopez's team. So he's obviously, you know, up to something here. At the moment, Adam Yates is just behind, looking after Simon Yates, and it's all kicking off up at the front in the break as well, with DeMarkey leading and Dylan Toins just behind. A ripple of applause in the bar, Fran, as Alejandro Valverde attacks.
Well, that was interesting and impressive. I thought this climb suited Quintana better, but yet they thought that it was better for Valverde to have a go and Quintana to follow on the wheels of the rest of the people, which is something we've never seen in this Vuelta.
Well, Valverde at the front of that group now, Jack Haig kind of shadowing him, Adam Yates just there, Simon Yates there as well, and up the front, Michael Woods and Dylan Toins pulling a little bit clear. Definitely a climb that should suit Woods. He's been battling crash injuries for a lot of this race, and they've been joined by Rafael Maika
and Emmanuel Gebrey-Xavier, the Eritrean rider for Dimension Data, new on the World Tour, yet very impressive in this beginning of the Vuelta a España. Well, in this whole Vuelta a España indeed.
Well, all that Valverde's attack seemed to do, Fran, was result in the pace going up and his teammate Nairo Quintana going out the back.
Yeah, I am pretty, I wouldn't say surprised, but still amazed at the reactions of the public, of the fans standing on the roadside when they saw Nairo drop. They didn't seem to praise or to support him, right?
No. I mean, it should be noted, great crowds, we're used to seeing this in the Basque Country, but fantastic crowds on the climb, very, very enthusiastic. Obviously, a lot of support there for Omar Fraile, who's just battling to stay in contact with that front group. Jesus Harada is up there, Zakarin is going backwards, and Quintana's, we're now back with the main group. Quintana's dropping back. Enric Mas is still up there, but I have to say, the Yates twins look very in control. This is what we expect to see from Adam Yates. He's riding on the front, Simon Yates behind him, Stephen Kruijswijk is there, Enric Mas, Valverde, very, very select group. And if Adam Yates rides like this the rest of the week and in the two Andorran stages, it's looking very, very good for Simon Yates.
Yeah, Adam Yates has taken it very easy in these first 2 weeks of the Vuelta, and that is great preparation for the Worlds and also a good way to set himself up for this final week where he is going to be key supporting Simon Smith for victory.
Michael Woods played an absolute blinder there, Fran. He followed a lot of attacks, and finally he's been the one who snapped the last day. He told us the other day for Kilometre Zero about how much he loves these steep climbs. And this will be, it looks like, his first stage win in a Grand Tour. He was in the top 10 in the Vuelta last year overall, but that's, I mean, a result he's been promising for quite a while, and that is certainly the greatest result and performance of his career.
A well-deserved and a spectacular win. I mean, I think this is a kind of rider, it's hard not to root for him, because he is aggressive, he is not afraid of showing himself in any circumstance, he's ambitious, and today he was just perfect from a tactical point of view. And also gotta say that this final kilometer riding into the fog, this looked epic, didn't it?
It was great, yeah. And as I say, the crowd's fantastic up there. And what impresses me about Michael Woods is he's come to cycling pretty late, and yet tactically he's very, very clever. We saw at the Giro last year as well, Pierre Roland won a stage and Woods was in the group behind marking, and really he did a lot to contribute to Roland's win there. And I thought there, you know, you can't really say that tactics can win on a climb as steep as that, but as far as tactics were a factor there, he played an absolute blinder. As I said earlier, he didn't, you know, fire his, he kept his bullet for the end, the one big effort. You know, other than that, he was following people, and really a really, really strong and impressive win by Michael Woods for Education First. Now, what's happening further down the mountain, Fran? When we last saw, and it's not very easy to see anything at all in the mist, we're seeing a lot of Nairo Quintana, who's a bit further down, but Superman Lopez was having a go, wasn't he?
Yes, he was the second man among the GC guys to have a go after Alejandro Valverde first opened fire. Now, into the final 500 meters, we are seeing Enric Mas actually attacking with Valverde and Simon Yates on his wheel. Miguel Angel Lopez suffering a bit. Stephen Kruijswijk already quite dropped by the rest of the GC contenders, as well as have been earlier Thibaut Pinot, Rigobert Urán, Emmanuel Buchmann, and many others.
And Yates is going to lose a little bit of time here to Valverde. Valverde has jumped away with Mas, and we just said as we watched the finish of the for the stage win that on this ramp up to the finish, if you crack a little bit, you could lose a little bit of time. It's going to be, what, three 3 seconds, 4 seconds that Simon Yates is going to concede, I think. Maybe a bit more than that. Clearly a bit of an effort there, and Valverde will be a little bit closer. And more importantly, Valverde looked the stronger rider right at the finish there.
How good is this finale for La Vuelta and for Spanish cycling? I mean, for La Vuelta, we saw finally the first flaws from the leader who so far has been probably the best rider of the race. And it came after attacks from the two Spanish contenders, Alejandro Valverde, which is basically the current glory, the current most important idol in Spanish cycling, with Enric Mas, the young up-and-coming star. So that's good news for a scene that is always struggling with depression, like the Spanish one.
Well, Fran, stage is over. We're back at the press end, having been to the buses, speaking to a few people. We'll hear those interviews in a moment or two. But still very finely balanced, the Vuelta, isn't it? A great win by Michael Woods. A very emotional win as well. He revealed after the stage that, he dedicated the stage win to his stillborn son, Hunter. I knew that his wife was pregnant, and that is very sad news indeed. And, God, this sport really does deliver some emotional moments, doesn't it? And that was another one. And yeah, a very popular win. I was at the Education First bus, and we'll hear from his teammate Simon Clark in a bit. But yeah, that was was one to bring tears to the eyes when he talked about that after winning the stage.
Cycling is above all the most human among all the sports. It's one that has been traditionally quite close to the public, and where its stars have been shy to share with the public everything they were going through. And yet this is a very good example that make us feel for the rider and make us understand how important it is for him. There is no glass, there is no wall between the cyclist and the spectators, and that's something that really makes us feel more attached to the sport.
Yeah, well, we saw that today. We've mentioned a few times already the crowds, they were huge up there. And I think, you know, we commented on this before, when the Tour comes to the Basque Country, there's a great deal of respect for the riders here. I can't think of anybody today in a stupid costume running alongside the riders. They were really big crowds. They were leaning into the road, but they were very respectful. And I could be wrong, but I didn't see any of them interfering with the race in the way that we unfortunately see at the Tour de France quite a lot.
Exactly. Instead of stupid costumes, there are children and teenagers wearing the kit of their local cycling club, you know, or their cycling school or their junior cycling team. That's a great joy to see in the Basque roads.
Well, as I say, we'll hear from Simon Clark a bit later on. The other story, of course, concerned GC. Little changes there, and it's more, I mentioned earlier on when talking to Matt White about momentum, you know, Kruijswijk built up some momentum in the time trial, but the momentum now really is with Alejandro Valverde. And Simon Yates just cracked a little bit. I'm not sure if he cracked, but he lost 8 seconds to Valverde, and it's the first little sign of weakness, really. And it does bring to mind, I don't think there are really parallels, but it does bring to mind the stage to Prato Nervoso, stage 18 of the Giro d'Italia this year, where on a summit finish and with two mountain stages left, which is the same situation, same stage we're at here, there was a first little sign of vulnerability, and his rivals took great strength from that. Now, there it was, you know, there was Dumoulin, there was Froome, it was a similar situation in a way, but maybe the caliber of riders was slightly higher. Here, Valverde, you know, will take a great deal of strength from just that, you know, that moment where he dropped, where he put a little bit of distance to Simon Yates, and he's clawed back 8 seconds. Well, let's hear from Matt White, because we heard from him already, spoke to him at the start, spoke to him at the finish as well. No apologies for that, because Matt White does offer a great insight into what's going on in the race and his team. So here's Matt White at the finish today. A difficult day. I mean, you said at the start you expected there to be a lot of aggression start of the race. That big break went. Did that work out quite well for you?
It did. It wasn't actually as aggressive as I would have expected. With shows, there's obviously a big percentage of the peloton pretty tired. But that was a good break for us. You know, De La Cruz was the highest there, 12 minutes. Maker 13 minutes, so we're happy to let that go, sail down the road. And we knew that the final would be tough, but to have a couple of guys around Simon Tull very, very late was a really good sign.
Well, Adam Yates rode really well today. You must have been pleased to see the work that he did.
Yeah, definitely. Look, it's been a plan since the start. We knew that the race was going to be won and lost in this last week. The plan was for Adam to have an easy as possible first half of the race and to come up when we need him, and that was today and right through to the end of the weekend.
So much is changing so quickly in this race. A few hours ago, we were talking about Stephen Kruiswijk. He lost time today.
A lot of time.
A lot of time.
A lot of time. He lost more than a minute to Simon, so he's back now to nearly two minutes now.
And now Valverde suddenly looks like a real danger man.
Yeah, look, he's always been for us. And the most dangerous thing about Alejandro as well is he's a real racer, never gives in, and he's fast. So he can take time bonuses. So he's our major threat. I think now Mas rode a very, very good final today, but he's still far behind. But Valverde is number one danger.
To be honest, Rich, I don't feel there is that much of a parallels. Above all, because of the kind of riders that Simon Yates is facing. After all, we are speaking about Alejandro Valverde. That even if he's strong and at an outstanding level, he is maybe not the best version of himself. And Enric Mas is still a very young rider. You know, To be honest, in the first stage, I couldn't foresee a scenario where he could win La Vuelta. And even at this moment, I struggle to see that happening. Even a podium finish would be a great surprise for me. And so what I'd say is that the solid performance of Mitchelton Scott today with Jack Haig and Adam Yates, quite great good at backing Simon Yates up the final climb. That's also another reason for optimism in Mitchelton Scott. And I would add a final one: the entity of the climbs that we are going to face in the stage of Friday, and the wanted top finish on Friday, even if it is long, is not that steep, and the mountain stage on Saturday is of course a lot of climbing, back-to-back climbs, but I don't feel that's difficult enough as for make that big of a difference as to cost the world to Simon Yates. I'd say one of the most relevant factors that is going to come into play is the bonus seconds, because the GC is very tight at this moment between Valverde and Yates. So if Mitchelton Scott lets breakaways go away and get those bonus seconds instead of the GC riders, that is going to play in the advantage of Simon Yates.
The Cycling Podcast is supported by Science in Sport. Science in Sport, fueled by science.
So the question today from Sam Bixby for Rob Child at Science in Sport. Just a quick nutrition question. I know that roughly speaking, your body can absorb a gram of carbohydrates per kilo of body weight per hour. But at the same time, how much protein can it absorb? And would combining the two help you stay fueled on longer rides, especially if the intensity is not particularly high?
Hi, Sam. That really is a very interesting question. Most of the studies on protein have actually given it immediately after exercise, not during exercise. So there isn't a really clear scientific consensus. What we have seen is that there are performance benefits available from consuming 60 grams of carbohydrate with 18 grams of protein hydrolysate per hour during exercise, relative to consuming just carbohydrates on their own. And interestingly, this level of protein provision fits really closely with Team Sky's strategy of consuming an SIS Whey 20 gel in the first hour of exercise in addition to their normal carbohydrate fueling. The Whey 20 provides 20 grams of dairy proteins in the form of whey hydrolysate and a protein called quark. And this product is scientifically proven to reduce muscle damage and improve recovery. So to come back to your original question, it looks as if about 20 grams of protein per hour in addition to carbohydrate is a good way to fuel your performance.
Thank you very much to Science and Sport for sponsoring the cycling podcast. Thanks very much to Sam Bixby for his question and to Rob Child for the answer. If you've got a question for Science and Sport about nutrition, email us contact@thecyclingpodcast.com. We've got plenty more for him to get through, but send us your questions, please. And as I say, we're grateful to Science and Sport. You can get 25% off your Science and Sport products with the code
SISCP25.
Whoa! Well done, Fran. That's at the website scienceandsport.com, SISCP25. At the finish, I spoke... What are you looking at me like that for, Fran?
I thought that we were going to describe the beautiful scenery we are watching from this park.
Well, it's not that beautiful, is it? I'm doing this as the most beautiful part of the Basque Country where we are currently.
No,
so why would we, you know, let's just move on. We collected some interviews at the buses. Do we not want to hear those?
But we are in front of a wall full of graffiti. And there is a curious story today involving graffiti. The EF Education First ban, several tracks of the Spanish TV have been all painted with graffiti by some Basque activists that were asking for amnesty for the prisoners of a former terrorist group that was active here in the Basque Country and the whole Spain, ETA. So, yeah.
I mean, what's that got to do with Education First?
They put some graffiti on the van.
Did they?
Yeah, they did. Didn't you see? Oh, come on. I can't believe you don't look at Twitter. You are a 21st century journalist. That should be your primary tool and source of information.
Oh, I missed this. Sorry. But I did speak to Simon Clark, who was... Simon Clark. He's a stage winner already, of course, in the Vuelta. And he sort of... he did a great job today for Michael Woods on a finish that certainly suited Michael Woods over Simon Clark. He did an excellent job. And he was the first Education First... rider back at the bus while he was speaking, and there you might hear some sort of slapping, and that's clapping of hands as Ben King rode past, double stage winner, former rider on that team, and he was obviously delighted for them and for Michael Woods, and he stopped to give his congratulations, just proving once again that he was a worthy second week peddler de charme, wasn't he? But here at the finish is Simon Clark.
Man of the match today, I think. When you sit down,
You're being called man of the match there. I mean, you had an important job to do there, didn't you?
We know, you know, Woods is an amazing athlete, but he hasn't spent a whole lot of time in this sport. When we both got in the breakaway today, I knew that I could have a big influence on him winning the stage today, and I knew he had the legs to do so. I made sure I used my experience to cover maybe what he lacked in a winning environment, and made sure that we stayed positive and we were always on the front foot, because we're 25 guys in the breakaway. As you know, if you get on the back foot, it's pretty much all over. So we were never on the back foot. Got to be aggressive, and I took that on to make sure he could just sit back and relax a little bit, focus on what he had to do on the final climb.
Was this a climb that you as a team knew? Had you studied it beforehand?
No, not at all. But we have Juan Magarate does great research on all the finals, and we have get fully informed before each day on a very detailed way on every final, with videos and Google Earth photos and whatnot. So even though we may not have ridden a final climb, we have a pretty good idea of what we're... and what's ahead of us.
When did you hear that he'd won?
I think I was about 2K to go, a K and a half to go, I think. So, yeah, actually, my team car literally passed me as he won, so it was quite cool to be with him when he crossed the line.
As you say, he's quite new to the sport, but he's sort of threatened to do this, hasn't he, in the last couple of years? This is certainly his biggest win.
Definitely. It was a long time coming for him, but the beauty of this sport is it's not just how many numbers you put out. There's also a fair bit of skill and technique and experience required to win bike races, not just numbers. That's probably why it's taken him so long, as long as it has, to win a big race, but he can do the numbers. So I think what he'll take away from today's win will be very important for his future, and I think we'll see him winning a lot more races now.
So that was Simon Clark talking about, you know, his experience as opposed to Michael Wood's relative newness to the sport. He came into the sport very late. He was a runner, and he's still learning. He's old in chronological years, but young in cycling years, and I think there's still more to come. As Simon Clark said there, he thinks he'll win a lot more now. But I have to say that he raced with a very, very cool head. I thought, you know, I mean, it was a finish that demanded certain physical capabilities, but it also required a cool head. And he, as I said earlier, you know, made his move at just the right time. And before then, he was following. As we've seen on some of these steep finishes, getting the timing right is so important. And he got the timing just right, and a very, very well taken win.
Yeah, and also a very deserved and necessary, I'd say, victory for EF Education First. After a kind of disappointing season, I would say, they are going to end up on a high. Even if Rigoberto Urán is not quite delivering on his bid for GC, he's going to do a solid top 10, right? But we were expecting maybe him to contend for podium. Anyway, these two victories make for two very beautiful pictures to hang on the EF Education First headquarters.
Yeah, well, they were delighted. Now at the finish, Fran, you spoke to a local rider. There were lots of them. Peo Bilbao, a Basque rider on Astana, who was another great teammate today. He did a terrific job on that climb. He's a great climber. Won a stage at the Dauphiné this year. Strong rider. And did a great job for Superman Lopez.
Yeah, he was indeed very amazing. I mean, the whole Astana team did a very good job for pulling on the head of the bunch, reducing it, but it was basically Peyo to trim it down to maybe 10 riders, dropping the likes of Urán, Pino, Emmanuel Brochmann. So I'd say that was an extraordinary domestic performance from him. Do you know what his motivation was? Let's hear it. What a pull you did on the peloton today.
Yeah, I was at home. These are my training road. I wanted to demonstrate in front of our crew that I was strong and that I could do a good job for Miguel. I think we tried full gas, all the team did a very good job, like we planned, and yeah, maybe in the last climb, if it was a little bit of a wind in the back, maybe it was easier to do a bit more of selection, but it was okay. I think I did the maximum effort. Also, Miguel did a good climb, and some riders went back, so good day for us.
We saw Miguel reaching the finish line, fourth among the GC guys, so he's still fourth in the GC. He has pretty solid options of podium. What do you reckon?
Yeah, I think so. Options for podium and still options to win the Vuelta, because in Andorra everything can happen.
Don't forget to listen to our morning show, Kilometer Zero, supported by The Economist. Monday, Wednesday and Friday mornings throughout the Vuelta a España.
Well, we heard there from Peo Bilbao, the Astana rider, and then we heard a reminder to listen to Kilometer Zero, our morning show. Today's episode was about BMC Racing Team, which will cease to exist at the end of this year, and we heard from Jackson Stewart and Brent Bookwalter, two men who've been at that team almost since the start, and I thought it was really interesting to hear from them. And on Friday, we've got a Kilometer Zero special coming up on Andorra, Lionel's favourite subject, his favourite place. A little bit of other business. Mentioned already, we've mentioned a few times, but the events that we're doing in November, on the 12th at Clapham Grand in South London, and on the 27th at St David's Hall in Cardiff. Tickets selling really well for both, but if you want a ticket, go to thecyclingpodcast.com. Live events, it'll take you to the page where you can purchase tickets. In London, we'll be appearing with Amara Terra, the band that does our music during the Giro, and lots of friends of the podcast will be there, as well as a special guest. Last year it was Matt White. I don't know who it will be yet this year, but likely to be a rider. We're working on that, and it'll be somebody pretty high caliber, and we'll reveal who it is if we need to shift a few tickets, but if we've sold out, we won't. It'll be a surprise on the night. So get your ticket while you can.
Am I the special guest?
No, not you, nor Daniel. Daniel asked if he was a special guest. Certainly not. No, you're just common or garden guest. A little reminder as well that our book, A Journey Through the Cycling Year, is available, and it's available as an audio book as well. If you want to get some more behind-the-scenes stories from the Grand Tours in particular. Now, before we go tonight, Fran, I spoke to somebody this morning, a Slovakian chap, who I've spotted, we've all spotted, at the start of every stage of every Grand Tour this year, Giro, Tour and Vuelta, on a wooden bike. At the Giro, it was carved into a map of Italy. At the Tour de France, it was carved into a map of France. You can see where this is going. Yeah. And he has made these bikes himself. He's an artist, and he gets the riders to sign the bikes. I was curious about his background and about, you know, why he's doing that and where what happens to these bikes once he's done them. So while I was speaking to him, Andre Amador came up and began petting the dog that he carries with him as well in a little wooden box, and start giving him some of his race food. Somebody's tweeted actually in response to that picture asking whether he was giving the dog Science and Sport products. If he needs a discount, he can ask Fran for the code. Well, he can now, because Fran has memorized the code. Anyway, well, something a little bit different, but his name is Mios Milnak, I think is the correct pronunciation. Let's hear from him now.
Art project, and I'm so excited, you know.
What's your name?
Milos Milnak.
Where are you from?
Republika Czeka, but I am Slovak from Czech Republic, so I usually say I am Czechoslovakian.
You've been the Giro, the Tour de France and the Vuelta, every single stage with three different bikes carved out of wood with showing a map of, well, Italy, France, Spain.
Exactly.
And you've made these yourself.
Yes, this is my art project, my artwork, and it took more than half of year, 7 days a week inside my atelier. And now I'm living my dream, man.
And you're getting the riders to sign the bike. So were you able to get all the signatures at the Giro and the Tour?
Well, I just asked as many as I can, could, and was amazing, you know, but because so many guys appreciated my effort and they signed these art pieces, and this is the final decoration of these art pieces, you know. So the point was that I can't finish these art pieces by myself. I have to ask them for kind help, and they did it, you know.
So yeah, it looks like you've got most of the riders to sign it, and you've got, so I didn't even mention your dog that you carry in the box on the back of the bike.
Yeah, this is my little baby called El Nino, 2 years old mini pincher, special one, Prague Ratter.
And they're popular with the riders, clearly.
Some of them, look at him. Look at this guy. Look at this guy. Gracias. Arroz. He's your friend for forever now. It was amazing time, you know. Three racings, the great racings on the planet, and the best cyclists on the planet, you know. Wow, I'm so honored. They appreciated my effort, my art. They signed it and helped me to finish this project.
How do you fund it, and both the artwork and the journeys that you've been on?
I created a first sculpture bicycle last year called Rosalinda. It's the tribute to the beauty of female's body. And people on the street were so amazed, you know, so they enjoyed this art piece. And so I decided to discuss more a little bit if I should go this way, if I build more sculpture bicycles, wooden sculpture bicycles. So I went to Venice for 11 days, until the police sent me off, of course. Because you can't be with the bicycle in Venice, it's forbidden, absolutely. So I went to Amsterdam. I was in Amsterdam 1.5 months, and it's a good place for new inspirations. And the idea to create this trilogy appeared there in Amsterdam last year in 2017. And now I'm here, you know, look at this, with the special sculpture bicycle signed all over. And
the three bikes from the three Grand Tours are going to be on display, I believe.
Yes, I'm gonna display them on public for free. I'm a professional street artist. Next year you can meet me from April in Puerto de la Cruz, Tenerife, España.
And what? How do you follow this? What do you do next year?
This winter I'm gonna hopefully finish my hopefully masterpiece. Will be the tribute to, and it's this is the secret, man. You have to wait until March.
Something a little bit different there, Fran. For all those who've seen this gentleman at Stage Starts, that hopefully answers a few of the questions about who he is and where you'll be able to see his bikes, his signed bikes. That's all then, I think, from here. We've got a long drive tonight. Then it gets a bit easier, doesn't it? We're inching towards, well, we're in Catalonia tomorrow, aren't we?
Yeah, we are sleeping tonight in Navarra. I am in Pamplona, you are in the outskirts. And tomorrow we will start from Aragon, from Eje de los Caballeros, and make it into Lérida, one of the four main cities in Catalonia.
And then up to Andorra. I mean, tomorrow is a pure sprinting stage, isn't it? Can't really, difficult to see any other outcome. But what's interesting is that Quickstep, who you would imagine would be keen to keep it together for Elia Viviani, now have another priority as well, don't they? Because Enric Mas has put himself in the position to go for the podium.
Yeah, but tomorrow, what the angle, the factor that can alter the race is the wind. Movistar team has been... there are some voices within the Movistar team talking about how Echenos might be possible. So if there's wind tomorrow, there were teams definitely interested in trying. But what I gather is that there isn't going to be a lot of wind. So we might see only a sprint stage after all, or a breakaway making it into the finish with Ivan Garcia Cortina as the main favorite. I say it now.
Okay, well, watch out for that. That's all for tonight. Thank you, Fran.
Thank you, Richard.